You bring pain 'cause you got game.
There's a restaurant not far from my home called Cliché. You'll understand it's a French restaurant. It's pretty good too. There's a history to the term cliché, and there's a big history to using them. You might have seen one of the dictionaries that you can buy that have all sorts of clichés that compete with each other, like everything comes to he who waits, or the early bird gets the worm. Which one is right? I don't know. They're really idiomatic expressions, perhaps, more than clichés. In any event, we've got a lot to learn about clichés, and Nana Ariel is a lecturer in the Faculty of Humanities at Tel Aviv University, and she knows all about clichés. She joins us now from Tel Aviv. Nana Ariel, thanks for joining us.
Hello, Amanda. It's great to be here.
Well, would you be caught dead using a cliché?
Sure. You can just look at the title of my article, thinking out of the box, right? That's one hell of a cliché.
It is indeed, isn't it? What is your interest in clichés?
You know, clichés have always fascinated me, but I've actually realized something new about them only lately. So as you can hear, I'm not a native English speaker. And when I was a visiting researcher at Harvard University in the U.S. a couple of years ago, as someone who really cares about language, I had two major concerns. First, of course, I hoped, as I do hope now, that I wouldn't make too many mistakes in grammar and so on.
Yes.
But my bigger concern was losing my originality. I thought that sophisticated native speakers would always be more original in speech. And I did fear I would fall into the cliché trap. But what I've realized while being there is, first, that I have no problem identifying clichés when I see them. That this outsider position as a foreigner even enabled me to see them better. But more importantly, I just stopped fearing using them myself. I didn't see it as such a threat. And all of a sudden, I saw the communicational function of clichés as connectors, devices that connect people, connect strangers. And it started to seem no less important than being original.
So do you have a concern that people are apprehensive about using them, or do you think we use them too much?
I think we all feel when other people use clichés. And, of course, we wouldn't want to admit that we use them ourselves. And they have some evident disadvantages. They are repetitive. We feel that they are empty shells, that they are no meaning. But I think that also some advantages, social advantages, advantages when we use them in art and literature, they're not only negative.
Not only negative, that's true. Well, what about Gustave Flaubert? He had a dictionary of received ideas. What does that tell us about clichés?
Yeah, so Flaubert wrote this dictionary of received ideas. He doesn't call them clichés, but there are sort of clichés. And he gives us a list of bourgeois clichés that he identifies, such as alcoholism, cause of all modern diseases, Academy French, in the form of the dictionary, right? Mm-hmm. Academy French, run it down, but try to belong to it if you can. So it's about the social hypocrisy of this banal bourgeois sayings.
Similarly with colonies, he apparently says, show sadness when speaking of them.
Yes, there is the more political hint there about, again, the hypocrisy of this bourgeoisie who just sit in their salons and speak sadly about the colonies while doing nothing about it.
Well, he was followed by the French theorist who wrote the book African Grammar, well, at least an essay, African Grammar, in a book on mythologies. Roland Barthes, what does he have to say about these types of clichés?
So Roland Barthes, the French philosopher, wrote in the end of the 50s his book Mythology, and there he emphasizes the more political aspect of clichés, because there are some quite convincing arguments against clichés, because if we are not aware of the repetitiveness of our speech, we might become passive speakers who just duplicated others' ideas blindly, and this has a severe ideological effect. For Barthes. For example, he talks about the common speech about the colonies, just calling them population, for example, just the word population, for not saying who they really are. Yeah. So he emphasizes that clichés has this feature of hiding the truth, in fact.
Now, look, let's get on to George Orwell, because I'm a big fan of Orwell's. And he doesn't like the dying metaphors, stand shoulder to shoulder with, play into the hands of, exhibit a tendency to, etc., etc. Probably Orwell was one of the, to me anyway, the most accessible writers on the use of English language and how to communicate well. Where do you see his positioning in terms of clichés, in that there are two sets of views here? One wise man says, well, it's just empty rhetoric, short form, nothingness. But the other wise man says, no, that short form is full of a lot of information and it conveys an understood meaning to a wide group of people. Where would Orwell sit between those two wise men? And for that matter, where would you sit?
So George Orwell, I think, is one of the most typical criticizers of clichés, and his Politics in the English Language, he denounces the use of empty rhetoric and even single words such as freedom, democracy, romantic, values, human, things that we tend to use too easily for him. And he's quite harsh about it. He even gives us advices of how avoiding clichés. It's kind of a guide of how writing well or better. But I tend to add another aspect to this approach, because, you know, when Orwell or Barthes or Flaubert write, they assume in a way that they themselves just don't use clichés. But don't they? Don't they use clichés? Aren't we all cliché users in a way in our own social context?
I think you're right. I'm sure we are. I'm talking with Nana Ariel, lecturer in humanities at the Tel Aviv University. We're talking about clichés and the people who say they despise them, whether they use them or not, whether we should use them. Aren't they good short-form communicators in one way of learned lessons over longer periods of time than we've lived? Maybe they are. But what about something new that might be a sort of new form of cliché, the meme? What do you say about that, Nana, the new memes that are out and about? Is that a digital cliché?
Yes, that's very interesting. There are many similarities between meme and cliché. First, they are both duplicated, repetitive cultural units. They are repetitive patterns. They are both also widely recognized in a time of a technological change, because the word cliché was created in the late 19th century. In the context of modern print, cliché is the click sound of the melting lead on the printing plate. And meme is today, you know, widely in the time of digital revolution. But still, we think of memes as effective means of expression, and we tend to think about language clichés still as bad repetitive versus meme as good repetitive. But what if we think of clichés as we think of memes? And the question is, what makes meme an effective and desirable kind of application as opposed to cliché? I think that what makes memes desirable is the ability to make variations, to create something new from the repetitive.
Yes, yes, yes.
And that is exactly what we also do with clichés. We don't use clichés only blindly as copy machines or something like that. We use them strategically to achieve certain goals. You know, often we just know we use a cliche, but we choose to use it anyway.
Yes.
We use them to create a fast and immediate common ground in certain situations. In literature, of course, there are valuable devices to represent social voices. And we mustn't forget the power of using cliches with, you know, these discourse markers, such as, it's a cliche, but there is no place like home, or stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. I agree with you entirely. I think cliches are very useful. Some people use them more effectively than others, but they can be tremendously effective tools of communication. Nana Ariel, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Amanda. All is clear.